You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
It's the Cooligans, stupid.
What's good, everybody? Another hot Cooligans episode coming your way. We're recording from home today because of the schedules, a lot of stuff going on. You might hear some stuff in the background, but this is the reality of, like, you know, when we had the lockdown and we had the viral video of the toddler running into the guy's office and all that stuff. I mean, my son can't walk yet. He's only 2 months old, but anything can happen, okay? But we're back home where I'm having some plumbing issues. It's being fixed right now, but this is the world we live in. So if you hear anything, that's what's going on, okay? If you hear crying, it's probably me. So I'm excited about today's show. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco, and I'm honored to be working with this man because a couple weeks ago, Alexis got the chance, while I was on paternity leave, Alexis got the chance to work with this man, a guy who I'm a huge, huge fan of. Obviously, you're very familiar with him if you are a fan of just any Meadowlark Media product and part of the Levitard family, the fanciest lad that has ever been on this program. Welcome to the show, Chris Whittingham. What's up, man?
Not much, man. Happy to be here, and I'm really happy to be along for this ride of what this podcast recording is going to be like, because, yes, I agree. Sort of like that guest that was on that BBC World News, I think, that one time?
Yeah,
the baby
yeah.
runs in the background. That's the good stuff. That's the good stuff. I want to hear all kinds of construction noises in the background, their home repairs going on at the Polanco household. I want to hear all of it, and I don't edit this out, producer Mike. Don't edit it out. I want to hear all of it, and it's full resplendence.
So... I'm gonna have my finger on the mute button from time to time.
No, leave it on.
So, right. Thank you for helping me not be, you know, self-conscious or appear unprofessional, because, you know, especially working with you have the stereotype of being incredibly professional, incredibly buttoned up amongst, a dirty sweatshirt that Stugat is wearing. You know what I mean? You always.
Yeah, the same sweatshirt and the same hat. Every time.
So, I'm trying.
Every time I see him on camera with a new hat on, I'm like, huh, it's a new hat. Congratulations.
So, I'm trying to be on my best behavior, but there's a lot of exciting things on the way on this episode. I just want to remind people, because I had mentioned a couple days ago on our last podcast that today's episode would have Maria Sanchez of the Houston Dash, but we had to reschedule some things. We had to, you know, clearly invite the plumber to the show. So her episode will be on her interview will be on next episode, which will be on Monday evening. So look out for that. It's a great interview with Maria Sanchez of Houston Dash in the NWSL. So look forward to that. But let's start real quick. I gotta tell the audience about something that was really exciting this week. I got the opportunity to work with U.S. Soccer Foundation and host the Congressional Soccer Match. And even, you know, and it's a little bit somber, but I was very excited to be there. But one of the only reason I was even there was because I was introduced by people from the U.S. Soccer Foundation by Grant Wall. And it's just one of those examples of, after he passed, we got so many stories and you know, we heard Witty on the podcast as well talk about just so many kind and good things that he did for people in this industry, and this is just one example of that. So every story I'm about to tell you, I just want to thank Grant, because none of it would have happened, and it was one of the wildest experiences I've ever gotten to have. So the U.S. Soccer Foundation, an awesome organization that really focused on it came about, I don't know if you know this, Witty, it came about after the 94 World Cup, When when the U.S. got the 94 World Cup, FIFA basically said, okay, you can have it, but you're going to have to create an organization to help grow the game in the country. And that is what U.S. Soccer Foundation is. They build mini pitches. They help grow the game in the country, for underprivileged communities, stuff like that. So that was why this game was happening. So it was a congressional soccer match. They do it every year. I think this is like the seventh or eighth iteration. And literally the final game is Republicans versus Democrats. They also do a staffers versus lobbyist game, and they do like a embassy game, which I didn't, I wasn't.
That sounds awesome.
But it was, so there were three matches. So
you could have like a mini World Cup in DC. That'd be amazing. 100%. An embassy World Cup. That'd be amazing.
It was super cool. The first I had got there, I was working with Jillian Sakovitz, your colleague at MLS. And we were emceeing, kind of joking around, doing interviews with some of the players, some of the politicians, stuff like that. So we got there for the staffers versus lobbyists game. That was the first one. And lobbyists won that game, as they usually do, right? The lobbyists.
I don't feel like I'd want to be playing for team lobbyists. there's a certain, like, evil characterization behind that. It's like, yeah, let's go lobbying.
And that's up the lobbyists, you know? that was sort of the being there, the tone of the game. It was way more lighthearted than when I was posting, being like, the staffers versus the lobbyists, 2-1. You know what I mean? It has a much more sinister kind of tone when you're just like reading the score line and things like that. But I was talking to some of the lobbyists, and the lobbyists were just like, hey, you know, we used to be staffers, but we didn't make enough money, so this is where the money's
at. Oh, God. Just completely dispensing with like the good of working in government, just like, I wanted some money. The money's in lobbying.
You learn very quickly it's the reality of American politics exists right here on the pitch. It is very much present. Where even a lot of the lobbyists and the staffers work together every day. I was even asking them. I'm like, hey man, is it more difficult to get a bill passed, one of these staffers, or is it, or when they're marking you, can you get passed? You know what I mean? And they were like, it's easier here. I can't.
Yeah,
the bills are a little bit tougher to pass. But
since you started this, all I've been thinking about is coming up with like a song for the lobbyists, like lobbies on fire, your Congress is terrified, lobbies on fire, like this, something like that. Yeah. What would the songs of the lobbyists be?
I was just thinking like the Star Wars Empire music. But I don't know if that would go.
Everyone crowd going da 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 da.
Obviously, we'll get to MLS. Let's start with Europe real quick, because Jude Bellingham was officially announced as a Real Madrid player. I don't know if you saw the comments from Toni Kroos, I think he just said this on his podcast, but he essentially said, oh, we had a player who we paid a lot to, and he like rested throughout his time here, essentially kind of throwing Eden Hazard under the bus. Oh. And some people sort of took it the wrong way, but also he's not 100% wrong. But now that Eden Hazard is not returning. So I think the idea was to sort of say that to maybe motivate Jude Bellingham, implying like, all right, you have to come here to work and we have to appreciate him. But Jude Bellingham going to Real Madrid, I think my first question, does this affect, and we'll talk about Mbappe, but this, does this have any effect? Is it more likely Mbappe to come, or less likely, because they're paying a lot of money obviously to bring him to Real Madrid?
Yeah, I think in this window it might be tough, but it also seems like Real Madrid have been sort of keeping their powder dry for two or three really big ones for a while now.
Right.
And, you know, Erling Haaland was certainly the first one. They clearly went all in for him, and Manchester City ended up getting him. But this is sort of what Real Madrid do. They try and get the star talent, the big up-and-coming, best 11 in the world caliber talent. And so I think they're always going to make that push. They're not going to make that push for all of them. But I also kind of wonder, with Mbappe's contract situation, sort of what that fee is even going to be. Because it seems like if he forces his way out, and he could just as easily say, I'm going to turn down that option next year, and I'm not coming back, and you're going to lose me for free, if maybe Real Madrid have some genuine leverage, because he'll probably end up saying, I only want to go to Real Madrid. That's sort of his boyhood dream. Right. So I wonder how much money it will cost. Obviously, the salary will be exorbitant, but if those are the only two transfers that they make in this window, Real Madrid will be just fine. They have, I think they probably need to start beefing up their defense a little bit. They've kind of gone the free transfer route with the likes of Rudiger and the likes of Alaba. They probably need another big center back to add into that team. But if they leave this window and all they've done is Mbappe and Bellingham, then that will be a very good transfer window, and that probably will about fit into their budget, because they've obviously been pretty conservative with money in recent times. For as much as they obviously are heralded for being the big spending clubs, as they've been rebuilding their stadium, they've done a fairly decent job of remaining competitive while not making that huge transfer really since Hazard.
Yeah, I think the in La Liga, they lost the league by how many points? I don't remember exactly.
It was a fair bit.
But it was a fair amount. So that was really the only place where you
10 points. They
10
lost
points. Okay, so relatively for that league, that you know, double digits is kind of a lot. And you wouldn't necessarily say that Barcelona are in some great financial, you know, that they sorted out all their financial issues. They just had a little bit.
That's why Lionel Messi's in Miami.
It clearly the priority for Real Madrid seemed to me was that they thought they could probably win another Champions League. And obviously they just came across the finally, the buzzsaw that Manchester City was always supposed to be for the last 5 years.
But that said, that they only accrued 78 points in La Liga. I mean, you go back to the Mourinho Guardiola days when the two of them were slugging it out. Each of them would get 100 points a season.
Right, right.
And Barcelona ended on 88, and Real Madrid ended on 78. They're not that strong, at least week in, week out. That's the thing that I don't really understand about Real Madrid, and I think it's sort of why their player-dependent strategy sometimes confuses me. Because for me, their whole thing is, we get big players, and that's what we do. But they've never really gone about building a philosophy in terms of, this is who we are. This is, you know, we build this particular style of play. It's built to be better than the best teams. And so you see them go into a semifinal against Manchester City and get run over. And you kept waiting for them in that semifinal second leg to turn it on and be Real Madrid and be a team that can be lethal and incredibly quick on the counter. But they didn't have any attacking ideas for the whole of that second leg. And I just sort of wonder, you know, yes, Bellingham will help, but they already had a great midfield, and they've already got, you know, Tchouameni, Camavinga, Bellingham coming through. They should be a spectacular team that every single week is destroying teams in La Liga. And it felt like every Saturday or Sunday afternoon, I have on FotMob, the app, you get notifications in, and I felt like every week they were 1-0 down after 20 minutes.
Oh,
they don't bring it every week. And that's the thing that's surprising to me. They can always summon a performance on a big Champions League night, but for whatever reason, I just don't think that they're consistent performers enough. And I think that's part of what Toni Kroos was probably talking about with Bellingham. You've got to bring this every single week, because our level hasn't been good enough.
Exactly. And they also allowed Tati Castellanos to put four on them in one game, which is like a huge four. For Girona, huge for Tati Castellano, obviously an NYCFC player on loan, so everybody was just dunking on them, like, yo, an MLS player just put four on you, pretty embarrassing. But even in the Champions League, in that game against Girona, like the ominous sort of kind of power that you sort of see from Real Madrid when they play almost any La Liga team, where most teams clearly fear them, and they play with this level of confidence. There were several games last season where that just was not present, and it was no more apparent than in the game against Manchester City, where there's whether home or away, there's rarely an instance where Real Madrid can't figure stuff out, where Vinicius can't kind of get by, and he couldn't get by Kyle Walker.
He couldn't complete five passes in a row. Like, never mind actually threaten Manchester City.
It was surreal. There was just a wild, like, lack of confidence. So I don't know if it begs the question about, like, anything going on sort of behind the scenes or whatever. But it was definitely a rough season. And also, Vinicius Jr. dealing with Monkey Chance, so many games, and all this other stuff. So it was, disappointing to say the least. Okay. So Mbappe, I want to talk a bit more about that. If he is, how likely do you think he's, I don't know if I guess he's leaving or not, but maybe the process right now, because he apparently sent a letter to confirm that he is not re-signing, and the PSG ownership were like, how could he send this letter? Why would he? This is he could have just knocked on my door and just and it's like, well, there's probably millions of dollars at stake, and he's just trying to be as like professional as possible. The saga, because I feel like we get this the last like 2 years, we've had this of like, is he staying or is he going? He ended up renewing for a whole ton of money, but now the just simply the fact that this drama is going on between them, it feels like this is a moment where the ball is on PSG's court to really make a decision whether, obviously, let him go for free or transfer him. But do you think they force that? Are they tired of dealing with Mbappe?
Well, I don't see how you can be tired of dealing with Mbappe when it's sort of entirely of your own creation. Everything at Paris Saint-Germain is the fault of the fact that over the course of 10 years, they never built a culture, an identity, anything. They have not built anything. And while, you know, I might sound like an overly sensitive Manchester City fan here, but people say all the time, oh, it's money. All you have is the money. And no, it's not. Manchester City have actually gone about trying to build something. Yes, the money is a huge part of it. But Paris Saint-Germain and Chelsea prove that you can spend all the money in the world and not actually create anything. PSG has created nothing other than shirts that sell, the Jordan brand, fashionable jerseys is about all they have as a club. And so when you have nothing upon which to build, you are entirely reliant on these star players, and these star players who you basically say, nah, if you want to F off the league every week because, you know, you don't want to play away at, well, I guess you'd probably want to play away at Marseille. I'm trying to think of away at Nantes, yeah, or away at Angers, or away at like all these. You know what? It's fine. Don't worry about it. We'll win the league anyway. Just come up for these big Champions League. No, you can't actually build anything that way. And so for me, you can't really get that angry. I mean, I guess you can because you're Qatari and you think that everything should go your way. Yeah. But, you know, like you can't actually get angry when things don't go your way. So my guess is they'll probably let him go and they'll try and spin that they're starting a new project with only building around Parisian talent or whatever. And they'll get rid of Neymar too, which is probably what they should do. But I find them to be such a basket case of a club. Like they're not serious. They haven't been serious for 10 years. And I cannot believe that they're now going to get to this point when they had three of the very best attackers in the world, three box office players, and they're not going to have done anything with them. And honestly, I'm as disappointed for Mbappe, because this is probably among, which is funny to say about a player who was a penalty away from winning two World Cups in a row, but yeah, among the worst possible timelines for him from a club standpoint. When he bursts onto the scene at Monaco, when they beat Manchester City in the round of 16 in the Champions League, you go, all right, where's this guy's career going? This is among the worst possible versions of it. Just sort of anonymous, you know, week in, week out. We don't watch him play every week. Champions League nights, he hasn't really delivered that much. He's had incredible international tournaments, but at club level, it's been kind of meh from him, which is not at all what it should be. He should be at a big-time club delivering big-time trophies week in, week out.
100%. One thing, René, un favor? La música, si la puede bajar?
Well, the guy's playing music? That's incredible. Sorry. You're recording a podcast and the guy is putting music on. That's insane. What kind of music was it?
It was merengue, bro.
That is painfully on brand. That's so good.
I mean, that's normally playing in my house.
Please have that on in the background during my PSG rant that I just did.
Okay, I mean, this is it, bro. We warned you up top. I feel like I've been doing this the last few days since the Messi news. I'm like, anybody that hops on a mic on this show, especially someone obviously very connected with the Miami area and obviously an announcer for MLS. But Messi, bro, tell me, Witty, how should I be feeling, bro? Tell me.
Well, I think my sort of primary feeling right now is curious. In the sense that, like, all right, so what happens from here? Because I think a lot of people talk about some of the shorter term gains, namely Instagram followers,
yeah,
that have come into Miami's way as a result of this Lionel Messi transfer. But I'm sort of thinking bigger. And it was interesting in sort of hearing, you know, people talk about, like, oh, well, you know, David Beckham only did this in MLS when he came. But David Beckham essentially announced a new era in Major League Soccer. You saw a number of investors come into the league, a number of expansion teams come into the league. They saw what happened when David Beckham showed up and thought, well, there's some potential here. And now, 16 years later, there's 16 new clubs in MLS since he joined. There's this entire infrastructure has built enormously ever since. And so, yeah, there are all these sort of cotton candy, the tickets are more expensive, and there are more Instagram followers, and that's cool, and that's great. But what's the actual big stuff that's going to happen as a result of this? And that, I think, sort of remains to be seen. There was an article in The Athletic this week about kind of how Miami are thinking over some of the hotels that they're staying in and the travel. That's the sort of stuff that I'm intrigued by. Is it going to be a raising of the level, the raising of standards, not just with Miami,
right,
but with all of the teams? What happens when, you know, he goes to teams that play on artificial turf? Is he going to play in those games? And if there's a big headline that says Lionel Messi leaves, you know, a bunch of fans wanting because he doesn't want to play on artificial turf, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it'll make a lot of teams question the surfaces that they play on. So it's that sort of stuff that I'm interested in, the reverberations. What is the big change that happens from here? How big does it become? Obviously, from a personal standpoint, I could not be more ecstatic, both in terms of Inter Miami. Obviously, I'm a day one fan.
Yeah.
Obviously, the club hasn't been around that long, but I think I'm like season ticket holder number one. So that's incredible from a professional standpoint. Obviously, the fact that we work for MLS Season Pass, we all want it to grow. We want people to subscribe. We want people to jump on board, and it seems like people will now for the run into this season. So that, obviously, we're enormously excited about. But I am genuinely curious about sort of how Messi raises the standards. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be by bringing in a bunch of other stars, but obviously raises the profile of the league. And do other teams go out and say, we don't want to go get Messi, we don't want to go get some other similarly aged star, but, you know, maybe go out and get some big name player from another team, and that player is willing to listen because Lionel Messi came. I think it's that sort of stuff that I'm interested in.
Witty, but actually what I do want to know is, who's calling that first Messi game? Are you putting your name in the hat? Do you have to fight Taylor Twellman for the opportunity? How does it get divvied up?
I have no idea. I have no intent on fighting Taylor Twellman. I feel like Taylor Twellman will be there, and I hope he has a great time, and I hope he does his usual magnificent work on the game. But it's been a funny parlor game from within the MLS Season Pass announcing community, going, well, it's funny because, I mean, the stadium is literally a 20-minute drive from my house,
right.
And I feel like I will only be seeing it in passing. I will be waving at it and like, all right, that seems, yeah. Have a nice time.
You work for MLS. But they're gonna be like, yeah, get a subscribe. That's how you're gonna see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do have season tickets, and also I have tickets, and it's worked out for a few of the away games. So like, there's one in LA that's on a Sunday, and so I'll probably be able to go to that. And there's one in Orlando that's on a Sunday, so I might be able to go as a fan to a couple of those.
Okay.
But yeah, that'll probably be as close. Well, I mean, look, obviously I hope, and if anyone from the MLS Season Pass production team or the bosses are listening, I'd happily do it. We'll see how
I want to say this, and I want to give you some praise, because obviously there's been a lot of matches I've watched, and I'm hearing you on the call and on US Open Cup as well. But this has been a big transition in your life, obviously leaving Levitard Show and working there, you know, daily, to focusing on your being an announcer for MLS. And you know what? I gotta say, I see the focus and the effort, the energy. Witty, you are becoming the, you know, a more you know, common voice where I'm like, I hope Witty is on this call. Or whenever there's a big goal and on a game that you're on, I'm like, this energy is starting to feel like this is what the voice of American soccer is supposed to sound like. So I'm loving it.
That's very high praise, man. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, I'm pouring... I always poured a ton into it and basically had no other life. It was Le Batard Show, my announcing life, and that was about it. But now, like, I'm really dedicating a bunch of my time and energy into, like, not just, obviously, the work, like, getting ready, but trying to, like... Like what you mentioned was sort of redoubling your efforts on making sure that you hit those moments really well and thinking about it. It's weird to sort of spend your week thinking about, you know, all right, if this happens in the game, then I'll say that. And like actually like putting some intentionality behind words. And it's completely different than doing something like this, where I feel like you and I are just having a conversation and people will be like, oh, do you have an announcer voice? And I say no, but now I kind of say yes, because there is no other format, I guess, in which people talk, in which you're being so purposeful
right.
about what you're saying, right? You've put thought into everything that you said. You put a bunch of this work. And so, yeah, I mean, I sound different because I'm not that purposeful in other bits of my life. But when I'm having dinner with friends, I'm just talking. When I'm hanging out with you on a podcast, I'm just talking. That's like prepared talking. It's completely different. Yeah. And I'm loving it, man. I'm really enjoying
it. No, it's great. And this, even MLS announcing like, oh, these are the assignments and these are the people going to be calling. Even the, you know, who was getting, is it, I forgot who was the call on the Zellerayan goal?
Jen Hildreth.
Jen Hildreth. Okay. Yeah. And clearly, like, Midwestern, you know, you betcha, shit, the you betcha in the call. And easily, when European people hear it, they're like, oh my God, American, why would they say this? But then I hear it and I'm like, this feels like I'm eating a hot dog. You know what I mean? It feels, I'm like,
in Chicago. Yeah, you're eating a Chicago dog. Yeah.
This feels like, you know what? Yeah, maybe it's a little bit different, but it's ours. I love the authenticity of it. And MLS doesn't need to sound like any other league, because what we're used to sort of getting is, like, if we're watching soccer, it has to be with an English accent. Otherwise, you know, regardless of what league it is or what, you know, what state the game is being played in, that was sort of the standard. And I think you and the rest of the crew are giving MLS its, like, own brand that I don't think we've had throughout the entire time throughout the league.
Well, I think it's interesting because you mentioned sort of the way that Jen called that. I think it's when you say authentic, it's authentic to the person, right? Yeah. And I think that's what's interesting about American soccer culture, is that to the person is vastly different from person to person, even from people that share a similar accent, right? Because there are people that, you know, came about watching soccer in completely different ways. Like, I will confess, like, you know, the first league that I started watching a lot of was the Premier League. And so you listen to a lot of British guys, and while you're not completely trying to copy what they do, there's a lot of the lingo and the jargon that just sort of comes through, and you've absorbed the game in a certain way. But then obviously I was also watching a ton of MLS, and you watch a lot of BN Sports, and guys like Phil Shane and Andres Cordero and those sorts of guys do their commentary in different ways. And so the American game gets to be so diverse because it's sort of not of one thing, right? English football culture comes from one place, yeah. The Premier League or the former First Division, and the ways in which you consume the game is almost entirely through the prism of the Premier League. Whereas in the US, you can consume, you can be a Mexican-American that has only ever watched Liga MX, and so you want the game to be called in that way. And to be fair, I've listened to a fair bit of Liga MX commentary and Univision commentary, and maybe that might have influenced me in other ways too. So I think that's the interesting bit, is that there are 14, 15 people that are part of the MLS Season Pass project, and they all came about the way that they call the games in completely different ways.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's interesting, is that they sort of develop their own voice in their own way, and it's not as homogenous than maybe in other countries, like in Italy, where everyone, you know, who calls games in Italy grew up watching Serie A and Juve and Milan and Inter and all those clubs, and they know precisely how the Italian culture works. And then you slowly branch out a little bit when it comes time for international tournaments or Champions League. But American culture is not one thing. American soccer culture is not one thing, and so each person can kind of go about their job differently.
Agree, man. And that's what it is. As soon as Messi starts playing some games, as soon as we get the call on his first goal, we know that the entire world will be watching, and they will be paying attention to the call, and they will be criticizing it, okay? Doesn't matter what. It could be the best call in the world. I mean, it might be Taylor and Jake, and that the criticism will be there. So the thing I tell these people all the time, I'm like, y'all need to chill, okay? Y'all need to chill with an ice cold Coors Light, Witty. That is the move.
Wow, that is a professional segue. Go on, Christian.
Because if you want to chill while you're watching MLS season pass and you're watching Messi just, it probably humiliate the Colorado Rapids. I know you're going to be tuning into those games. You can do it with an ice cold Coors Light because, and the thing that is so helpful and so useful, we're speaking of Colorado, the mountains, you know, those mountains are right on the can, and they turn what color do they turn?
They turn blue when it's cold enough to be ready to drink.
Okay, so they turn cold, they turn blue, so it's cold enough to drink, it's hot enough for Messi to go in the mile high city and embarrass the Colorado Rapids. That is all the direction you need. So when you choose to chill, pair your plans with an ice cold Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligans. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Major League Soccer this season, we're midway through. Obviously, Witty, you've been covering this season in depth. And if we take a look at, a couple things that, maybe surprised you in this season. I know, at least for me as an NYCFC fan, to see NYCFC not even in the playoff picture and sitting in 13th in the Eastern Conference, it hurts because this team is just – in the inaugural season, I expect – this is what we sort of all expected, and it was difficult – I was at the Red Wedding, the Red Bull Wedding. I was there, and it was, I always have that scar on me. But there's been a lot of improvement after that. But NYCFC, they just, whether it's just simply not having a striker, whether it's, some of the roster decisions, it's been difficult for me to see them play the way they play. But what do you think about that? And then also, what has been surprising you this season?
I think on NYCFC, they're probably a club like other clubs, like Seattle, I think, has used this mechanism a lot, where first half of the season might not be great, but the transfer window that opens in the summer is probably the better window to do business, both buying and selling. And so I do think that they're probably leaving some of that powder dry for the summer, and they'll probably make some moves that'll make them a stronger team for the run into the year. I'm still surprised, though, when it comes to New York City, that at the very least, the one thing you can rely on them for was that they would make their baseball field advantage tell. Right. That they know how to play at Yankee Stadium, they know how to play at Citi Field, and for every other team, it's a significant adjustment. And I had Inter Miami in the playoffs last year, away at NYCFC in Citi Field, and it just, they never were really able to figure it out. It's a difficult thing to go and do. So the fact that they aren't even winning home games, I remember towards the end of last year, they were so good at Yankee Stadium that whenever they played there, they were enormous favorites. It'd be like -250, -300 favorites at Yankee Stadium, and that's unheard of in Major League Soccer. Usually the parity dictates that there really aren't that big of favorites, but they're so good there, and they know how to, they know how to play there so well. But so the fact that that advantage isn't even telling right now, I think is a big concern. But I think they're definitely a team that will strengthen in the summer window. They'll bring players in, and I think that they'll be fine.
I told people all the time, the last like 3 years, any friends that were interested in getting tickets or interested in going to the game, I'm like, hey, look, if you go to an NYCFC home game, you're probably going to see them win. They just – yes. There was a
– And score quite a few goals as
well. Yeah, there was definitely a streak of – you know, I almost – pretty much attended almost every game, every home game. And there was just such a long streak where I just never saw them lose. Even if they drew, I was like, man, this doesn't sit right with me. Why are they drawing?
Yeah.
They were that good. Anything any surprises otherwise this season? And I also want to ask about what your favorite game that you've called this season has been for you. So you can think about that while you're answering that question.
Sure. So I think in terms of surprises, I'd have to start with Cincinnati. I know Cincinnati were good, and some people were tipping them for the supporter shield, but I'm still surprised that they've been this good because – I kind of look at the squad, and you know, last year's team I think is probably a slightly better team. I know that the Miazga joined late in the season, and he allowed them to improve defensively at center back, and Wobodo joined midseason. So I think the team that finished last year, because they had informed Brenner, and even I thought Brandon Vasquez was better last year than he's been so far this year, and yet they just figure out ways to win games.
Yeah.
And that, I think, it's one of those things that I sometimes have difficulty wrapping my head around in this league sometimes, is the teams that actually succeed at that level. Because you can point to, like, when LAFC, you know, set the points record a few years ago, you got it. You turned on their every game and you're like, okay, this team is awesome. And they rip teams apart. But I don't have that same feeling about Cincinnati where I can tell why they're that much better. And honestly, like, part of that is because I've seen them in person once this year, and they struggled a bit in that game. They played a Philadelphia Union team that was rotating, and their whole goal was to kill the game, and they did so successfully for like 65 minutes. So I haven't really seen them at their very best in person, and it's tough just to sort of catch up, particularly in Eastern time zone games, because they're all happening when you're either working or getting ready to work. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm watching out for Cincinnati, not in terms of I think they're frauds or anything. I think they're a really good team, but in sort of identifying why, I think is probably the biggest thing. And to answer your question about the best game that I've watched this year, I'm sort of going through the list here. Honestly, I was in New England a couple weeks ago. They played Chicago, and that game finished 3-3. Yeah. And at the end of it, I sort of looked at Laurie Lindsay, who I was doing the game with, going, what was that? That was crazy. Because,
yeah,
like, Chicago bossed the game for 35 minutes. Jordan Shakir, I think, turned in his best performance of the year. And then within 3 minutes, it was 2-2. It was like, what just happened? Chicago were cruising in this game.
Yeah.
And it finished 3-3. So that game was really cool. I also got to call the game where San Jose played LAFC at the NFL stadium where the 49ers play. So it was kind of like, it was the first time probably since college that I've called a game from an NFL stadium. And obviously all the trappings of being in a venue that big were amazing. So those would probably be and also San Jose scored a late winner in that one. So that was a really good game. So yeah, I've had some really good ones this year where you sort of like get off the air going, wow, that was genuine high top drawer entertainment.
Yeah, there've been a couple 3-3 like wild game. I mean, Atlanta just had one. Charlotte had one against Seattle. The New England one as well. Before I forget, we're talking about Cincinnati. Lucho Acosta has announced that he's going to be getting American citizenship. And
he's applying for American citizenship.
But it looks like it's being somewhat expedited. U.S. Soccer is like, hey, this guy, he's a
let's put a letter of recommendation in for this lad. Got, he's quite good.
Man, American is apple pie. Oh, Lucho Acosta, we all know him. But this idea, I think it sent USMNT Twitter into a little bit of a frenzy because Lucho Acosta, is he just an absolute guaranteed lock starter if he's eligible and if he gets a call up?
I don't know. I think it sort of depends, and this is interesting to me. Because I think, you know, he theoretically plays a position that Gio Reyna would occupy, which is that sort of number 10 position. But also, I cannot remember the U.S. ever having a player like Lucho Acosta.
No.
just in terms of the way that he plays the game, where it's about buzzing about from the 10 and your idea is to create for everybody and just sort of have that sort of very tricky skill in and around the ball and in tight areas. And so for me, I don't even know how he would fit. Like, I don't know. If you bring him into the team, the U.S. has never played with a player like him before. And so how do you even reconfigure the team? Is it about bringing on a player like him in the last half hour of a game when you need someone to create something? Or are you kind of building a system around him? That midfield was sort of built around McKennie, Musa, and Adams, who are none of those guys are tricky, technical, creative players. Yunus Musa is incredible technically, but he's not really like in that same mold of like playing in a number 10 role and creating the game and not really doing a ton of defensive work. I think the defensive aspect of things is fascinating. So I find in general, having a player like him to be like, what do you even do? The probably closest facsimile, I'd guess, would probably be a player like Benny Fellhaber back in the day. But even him, like, they go about the game in completely different ways. So I'm fascinated to see, like, if he becomes eligible, how a manager would sort of fit a system around him, because he's sort of unlike anything the U.S. have ever had before.
Yeah, it would weirdly, like, I don't know, throw a wrench into, like, what Greg Berhalter kind of built with this roster. Definitely, and he's not a young guy, you know. And then if you think about the 2026 World Cup, how old would he be? I think he'd definitely be in his mid-30s by then. It would be...
Yeah, he's 29 now, so probably be, like, 32 by then or something like that. Right.
Lucho would kind of... It would introduce this like confusion, almost like it, we know he's an obviously great player, and then it's just like, but how do we make it work? He sort of reminds me of like, you know, Giovinco, but like in the, he's just like his stature, and that's one of the main things of like, we've just never had really a player that like small, right? Because Americans are always like, we're always thinking about athleticism and height and strength and blah blah blah, and we've always sort of looked past players that are just small technical players. Like,
we've never had an Argentinian number 10 before, mostly because we've never had an Argentinian play for the national team.
How we missed the Argentinians playing on the American national team. So it would be surreal. I know Pablo Maurer had asked him about it, Lucho Costa, and he said he would accept a call up, and he said that he would, you know, he had hopes of being called to the Argentina national team. But and this is like, you know, his words. He said once he saw the World Cup, he was like, I'm done. I'm past it. They're never gonna call me.
But they're like, unfortunately, that as long as Alexis McAllister exists, I probably will not be getting the call up into the national team. But yeah, I do sort of find interesting like the notion of like, is there a level of player that MLS can recruit that is obviously very good from a big footballing nation? They like it here enough, they play here enough to sort of stay in it for the long haul, but they're not quite good enough for their blue blood national team, and this might be a path in the future. I guess Darlington Nagbe was sort of the last example, who was eligible for Liberia and ended up playing for the U.S., but I don't know. I don't know sort of what the future of this is. This is such a rare case, and this particular skill set is such a rare case. I'm fascinated to see, you know, Copa America next year. Is Lucho Acosta going to be the American super sub that comes off the bench and changes things? That would be insane. And like, let's remind the listener as well, this is a player that was like on the 1 yard line of going to Paris Saint-Germain.
After that
big season that he had with DC United, he almost went to PSG and played under Thomas Tuchel. So this is a player with a significant pedigree.
Totally. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. That was like a disaster. He was like devastated when that deal didn't go through.
And that was legit on the 1 yard line.
We're talking U.S. men's national team. As you're watching this or listening to this, the U.S.-Mexico game at the Nations League semifinal has probably already happened. But this, so we can predict. I don't know exactly what to expect. I would assume I slightly favor the U.S. team just because Mexico are a little bit more disarray. But it's also U.S. has the issue with their manager. They had Anthony Hudson, and he bounced for a Qatari team. And then now we have BJ, is it Callahan?
Callahan. Yeah. So should we record two versions of this then? All right, so I'll do like a 10-second recap of the game.
Okay.
Either way. All right, here we go. Falerin Balogun scored a hat trick on his debut. This is insane. What a performance for the United States. They beat Mexico yet again. The U.S. are Mexico's daddies. All right, so that's version one. Number two. Man, the U.S. program waited so long to hire a manager, and it's cost them at this nation's league. Losing to Mexico, we were in control of this rivalry, and we let it slip away. This is terrible. What has the U.S. program done?
This is, all right, well, I just want...
There you go. All right, so producer Mike, put the better version of it in the podcast, and we'll be fine.
I got to applaud, because Whitty did not write anything, wasn't prepared, but he has, yeah. I mean, it is, you know, you got to unlock. It was great work. I was gonna include, like, I can't believe Walker Zimmerman contributed 7 own goals. What a ridiculous game.
Oh man, you figure they would have taken him off after 2. I do that sometimes. So sometimes when we rehearse for MLS season pass, I'll be like, all right, let's do the halftime segment now, because we have like an intro. Yeah, yeah. Like we did one where like we tossed into a piece and we came out of the piece, and when it's some messy b-roll, so like they'll be like, all right, so bring us into halftime, be like, all right, here we go, 3, 2, 1, New England Revolution 7 Inter Miami 5 here at Gillette Stadium. It's been an extraordinary game this week, blah blah blah, and then like you go into whatever rehearsed piece we have to get to. So
amazing. Okay, so the only news in regards to this to Nations League that I really want to talk about is just Greg Berhalter sort of being in the news. Yeah. Again, because obviously there is a search for a manager. We had heard
at Club America.
Yeah, I know, right? They need a manager too. But that was also kind of wild to see Greg Berhalter.
Yeah.
Just to see an American manager in contention to manage at such a huge club in Mexico. But it looks like that isn't happening, because I think Greg is holding out hope that he still has a real opportunity to coach the U.S. men's national team again. And we've seen comments from obviously Christian Pulisic, who has been very, you know, pretty straightforward and said, like, hey, we would, yeah, I'd be fine if Greg came back. There was somebody else, I think it was Tim Weah,
yeah,
kind of saying that, but it clearly it would upset a lot of people if he does come back, but it doesn't seem it'll upset everyone but the players. Is that a good enough reason, especially after the U.S. soccer hires a sporting director, does a bunch of interviews, and then if we go right back to Berhalter, did we even need to hire that guy? You know what I mean? It feels a little bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It would be, what was the point of all of this? Not only in terms of, like, you know, hiring a sporting director and going through what you've gone through, but also going through 2 summer tournaments where you can make legitimate inroads because you're playing competitive games against Mexico, potentially against Canada, and some of the other big CONCACAF nations, and you're not really building towards something. BJ Callahan and Anthony Hudson were sort of doing reasonable facsimiles of Berhalter. They haven't really changed up the system that dramatically. They haven't really changed up the personnel that dramatically. We didn't see them come in and go, all right, well, clearly what Greg was doing was wrong, so let's try something else. And so why waste your time on worse versions of the Berhalter system to then bring him back when he could have just been building on what he had built? Because I do think there's a certain amount of, like, how much did Greg Berhalter actually get to implement and do over the course of his time? And how much was he readjusting off the back of the personnel that he had? And so there's still, like, it's not like Greg Berhalter's team at the World Cup was a finished article. Right. It wasn't like, all right, this is my final essay. No, like, this is like that. Those were like his midterms, theoretically. So I do think that Berhalter could have more work to do. I am definitely I'm probably in like the 1 percentile of positivity when it comes to Greg Berhalter, because I don't think he did a bad job. I think he actually did a very good job. And I wouldn't be completely bothered if he came back. That, for me, like, that turns me into the 1%. Because, like, there's this vitriol. And I don't understand where it comes from, because his peers, I think, said a lot of glowing things about Greg Berhalter. His players have said a lot of glowing things about Greg Berhalter. And I think there was an interesting quote this week from Folair and Balogun, talking about sort of the environment that he stepped into. And he said he felt almost humbled to walk into a group that likes each other so much.
Oh.
And I thought, it's really interesting that, like, they have built a genuine culture that people want to be a part of at U.S. Soccer. And I think Greg Berhalter deserves some credit. That being said, I'm sort of an absolutist about international managers getting 1 World Cup cycle, and then it's another new set of ideas. And I'm really intrigued by the idea of Patrick Vieira being the U.S. men's national team manager. I'm sure as an NYCFC fan, you are well aware of his attributes as a manager. I think he's a very good coach. I think he has kind of the perfect pedigree and experience of a manager that you want to step into a national team. He's obviously interested in the job. It was reported by ESPN this week that he's interested in this job and has interviewed for the job. He would be my pick right now. But if Greg Berhalter came back, I would not be devastated.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of fans would, and the vitriol would continue when I honestly don't think that there's a ton of basis for it other than people are still mad about how he was hired when there's been a mountain of evidence to prove that he's up for the job. He won the Nations League the first time. He won the Gold Cup. He beat Mexico three times in a year, qualified the U.S. for the World Cup, got them out of that group, turned in really good performances that World Cup. I think he did a solid B-plus job in charge of the national team. I wouldn't say it was perfect, but it was a solid B-plus in my view. And people, I think, are just sort of hanging on to their negative perceptions of him from the start, or when he was overly insistent on playing with Will Trapp in midfield, or overly insistent on certain players that, like, that you've held on to this for a while. Like, let it go, man. Like, it wasn't that bad. It won't be that bad.
I agree. Yeah, dude. I mean, it's just there's a lot of just straight up you know, even when I was interviewing Tim Ream, and, you know, and even talking to him about, like, I asked him, like, what he sort of, like, regretted about how they played against the Netherlands at the World Cup. And he was straight up. He was just like, I did not think that they would just let us have the ball like that. And it's one of those things where the Netherlands are very, very good. Like, if Greg and the U.S. win that game, do people change their tone on how they feel about
it? Yeah, if Christian Pulisic scores that chance in the first 5 minutes of the game, like, what conversation are we having now?
Yeah, yeah. So
maybe they go on to lose 3-1 anyway, but, like, I you know, I was a little bit afraid going into that World Cup. I underestimated the U.S. just because, like, I have a few friends in my life that are very negative about Greg Berhalter and very negative about the U.S., and I was sort of like, just don't embarrass us. And I left that World Cup incredibly proud of the performance that the U.S. turned in. And look, maybe they should have beat the Netherlands, and at some point they've got to take the step where they believe that they can beat a team of that quality and go out and do it in a knockout round. And they did it in 2002, but they haven't done it since. Yeah. And I do think that eventually the U.S. has to raise its standards above, oh, we turned in a great performance, guys. And if you think that that time is now, fair enough. Like, I won't completely disagree with you. I think the U.S. has a certain level of talent. But I did not watch the U.S. at the World Cup and think that, you know, another manager could have taken them to another step beyond where they were, or that they were embarrassing, or that they were bad. I thought the U.S. was, on the whole, very good at the World Cup.
I 100% agree. Well, we'll see how they you know, how this U.S.-Mexico game turns out. Let's wrap up the show with our final segment. We got to bring in Miguelito. That is Mike Malley's. We Latinofy our producer.
Good.
So Miguelito.
Miguelito, who's got a job on to edit this podcast.
Miguelito, we call him Miguelito Maye.
If I guess in the spirit of Messi, should we make him Maché?
Maché, okay. He's a Cuban shortstop out of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, we're Argentinizing his name. I'm calling him Maché.
Okay, perfect. But we want to build a little MLS parlay. Miguelito, what are you picking for our parlay this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, guys. We have Woody here, so we got to do a little Thursday Thunder ripoff from Levitard Show, honestly. Also exciting, this might be the first time you guys can see me, can see my beautiful face now, potentially.
Wow.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, back to the MLS parlay. We're going to do a little parlay for the people. I guess we'll each just go around and pick one leg. My first one I got is Sporting KC versus LAFC. This pick is honestly mostly based just from anger on betting on LAFC the past few weeks and them not winning. So now I'm just like, I'm mad. So I got to go against my guys. Shout out to Kevincho, obviously. But Sporting KC has also been great. Alan Pulido looks like, you know, the guy that we thought he really was supposed to be. So
Dave?
I'm taking Sporting KC plus 155 on the money line.
Okay.
I'm calling that game, so I can't offer a pick on it. I can only give you a key to the game, like Kirk Herbstreit on College Game Day, and say that Sporting Kansas City, healthy, LAFC, not. Yeah, and also missing Denny Bouanga away in international duty. That's a huge one. No Jose Cifuentes either. And on Wednesday night when they lost to Houston, I'm making noise now. So on Wednesday night when they lost to Houston, playing kind of a makeshift back four didn't really work. And I think some of the younger players in that team, Bogush and Buke in particular, haven't really fully integrated yet. So they're still very much finding their way. So I can't give a pick, but, you know, key to the game there.
Okay. Did you give your pick for your game?
No, I've not given the pick yet. Yeah. I can give it now.
Go for it.
So I was just there. I've my second home. I live in Miami. My second home is Foxborough, Massachusetts. I've been to New England quite a bit this season. They're home with Orlando City. I think there's something about the way that, like, again, we talked about home field advantage of playing on the baseball stadium. I think New England sort of know how to navigate their turf pretty well. Carlos Hill is finding form. Gustavo Bow is back and healthy. I think New England can go on a little bit of a run here, particularly when they get fully healthy, getting Brandon Bye back, getting Henry Kessler back at some point. So I'm going to go for New England. They're minus 125 at home against Orlando City. I'll go for the Revs.
Okay. My pick, I'm going to go the San Jose Portland. San Jose's at home against Portland. Portland still doesn't. They haven't really figured out what they sort of want to look like this season. Kind of up and down year. But San Jose with Bobesi and Espinoza just playing incredibly confidently. So I think San Jose wins. I don't know what the line is here.
Yeah, I got your odds for you. San Jose is plus 105 on the money line. So we got the three legs again. New England Revolution minus 125. Sporting KC plus 155. San Jose plus 105 combines to a plus 840 parlay. So you bet 10, wow. You're winning 84. Pretty solid odds.
Okay.
I actually like this. I'm going to put this in myself. Right. I'm not going to lie for this weekend. Let's see how we do.
Or a little tidbit. I've played soccer with Jeremy Abobasi's brother.
Wow.
Yeah, he lives in Brooklyn. I played soccer with him.
Was he playing for the Democrats or the Republicans?
He was an independent. I'm like, dude, you got to pick a side. This is not the time. Okay? Don't be Ralph Nader on the pitch, you know?
By the way, I have a tidbit. San Jose, 6 wins, 2 draws, 0 losses at home this year. Very good home team.
I'll do it. Okay. Witty. Miguelito, thank you so much for the contribution. I don't know what image I'm looking at. I'm sure it's hilarious. But Witty, thank you so much for joining me, man. This has been an absolute honor. Honored to work with you. I'm sure you'll be back on soon. You said you're going to be calling which game this weekend?
Kansas City, LAFC.
Okay.
Saturday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS Season Pass. I will also echo, it has been an honor from my standpoint to be on with you and all of the repairmen that have been in your home in the last hour.
They all get a guest credit on IMDb, bro. Everybody, this has been a wild episode. I don't know what this edit is going to look like, but if you want to hear the uncut version on Patreon, go to patreon.com/soccercooligans because this was a wild one. But thank you for powering through with me. I really, really appreciate it. Everybody, we'll be back on Monday evening or Tuesday morning whenever you download the podcast. But we have a really fun interview with Maria Sanchez of the Houston Dash in the NWSL. It was really, really dope. So I'm excited for you to hear that. We, as always, follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans. Follow me at Chris Polanco on Twitter, at Christian_Polanco on Instagram. And Witty, where can people follow you?
At Chris Whittingham on all social platforms. I've unified my handle. So if you search Chris Witty, W-I-T-T-Y, it should come up in case you can't spell the whole name. So Chris Witty, look it up on Twitter or Instagram.
I've been trying to get Chris Polanco on Instagram, and it's like, I think, like a Venezuelan guy that won't give it up. He just doesn't even use the account.
Oh, man. I was really circling around at Chris. I'm jealous of people that just have their at first name. And obviously, Chris, I imagine, is probably like Twitter employee number 7 that got that. But like it was inactive for a while, and then Elon came in and swept out all the inactive ones, and somebody jumped on it. And now at Chris appears to be lost forever.
Bro. All right. I mean, I would have taken it too, bro. I got to fight with you for it as well. Chris, is your full name Christopher or Chris? Or okay,
yes.
Okay.
I'm a Christopher.
I'm a Christian.
Christian,
pa que sepa. All right. everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Witty, as always, seriously, really appreciate you. And we'll be back, everybody. Peace. Take care.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.